Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Yene drishin gatim aso dashamasya isha. Yene drishin gatim aso dashamasya isha. Yene drishin gatim aso dashamasya isha. Yene drishin Yeni drishim gatim maso dasha masha isha. Sangrahita purudayena bhava drishena. Sangrahita purudayena bhava drishena. Sangrahita purudayena bhavajishena. Yene drishingatim asau dasya masya isha. Sangrahita purudayena bhavajishena. Svena eva Tushatu kritena sa dina nata. Svenaiva tushatu kritena sa dina nata. Svenaiva tushatu kritena sa dina nata. Ko Nama tat prati binanjalim asya kuryat. Ko nama tat prati binanjalim asya kuryat. Ko nama tat prati binanjalim asya kuryat. Svenaiva tushatu kritena sadina nata. Ko nama tat prati vinanjalim asya kuryat. Yene drishim gatim aso dasya masya isha. Sangrahita purudayena bhavadvishena. Svenaiva tushatu kritena sadina nata. Ko nama tat prati vinanjalim asya kuryat. Yena. By whom? The Lord. Idrishim. Such. Gatim. A condition. Asau. That person. Myself. Dasha Masya. 10 months old. Isha. O Lord. Sangrahita was made to accept. Purudayena, very merciful. Bhavadrishena, incomparable. It's nice here that he's saying that the mercy, because he's saying Isha Sangrahita Purudayena Bhavadrishena, that the Lord's mercy. You know, I've accepted this incomparable mercy of the Lord. The Lord's been very, very merciful upon him, because here he is in this horrible condition. Well, the jiva, you know, I think it's being referred to as a he, But the jiva in the womb has received this incredible mercy of the Lord, whereby they're able to exclusively focus upon Krishna. It's quite a, if we go back, I think it's in verse 9, it mentions here. Where is it? It says, at that time, if the child is fortunate, daivat, by fortune. Which is interesting, because this daiva, if we go to the very first verse in this chapter, it says, kamana daiva netrena, that under the control of the divine. So we can see this daiva also is being translated here as by fortune. So we can see that this good fortune of the jiva is actually the mercy of the Lord. It's not chance. It's not like you play the lottery, or you go to the casino here and you play the pokies or something and wow, I won some money. It's not like that. It's by the mercy of Krishna. So this person has done something that puts them in this situation where they're eligible to receive the mercy of the Lord. And I think it was as Venugopal Prabhu was speaking yesterday, that even like one may practice bhakti but not necessarily receive the mercy in the way they're expecting, because the Lord's mercy is causeless. You never can tell how, and we see there's so many examples. I was somewhere recently, we were reading the Bhagavatam, and it was talking about Narad Muni's advent, when he was meditating and saw the Lord, and the Lord said to him, you won't see me again in this life. Even though he was very, very eagerly trying to see the Lord, the Lord said, you won't see me again in this life. So we can't force Krishna into doing things. Krishna is independent. He's Atmaram. He just does whatever he likes. He's self-sufficient. He doesn't need our worship. He doesn't need whatever we have to offer. But out of his kindness, he agrees to accept it. And sometimes he reciprocates very openly with us, and other times he doesn't. But that's his nature. And we see, the prayers of the highest servants of Krishna, they're praying that, Radharani, she's praying that, you're free to do whatever you like. You can love me by your embrace. You can trample me under your feet. I don't mind, because you're always my Lord. And this is the condition of surrender. This is full surrender. You don't mind what comes back. Whereas we tend in this material world to be very conditional. I'll do this as long as I get this in return. I had an experience the other day. One of the pujaris, I was asking to do something in our temple, and they said, okay, I'll do this, but I need you to do this for me. Straight away, there was a trade. I'll do this, but I want something back. This is conditional service. And while in the beginning stages that may be okay, we need to get to this point where we'll serve Krishna regardless. We'll talk more about that in a little while. Svena Un Eva Alone Tushatu, may he be pleased. Kritena, with his act. And that his has a capital H, so it's indicating Krishna. Sa, that. Dina Natha, refuge of the fallen souls. Ka, who? Nama, indeed. Tat, that mercy. Prati, in return. Vina, except with. Anjalim, folded hands. Asya, of the Lord. Kuryat, can repay. So here the jiva is saying, it's like, I've received so much mercy from you, I can't repay you. All I can do is just stand before you with folded hands and beg for your mercy. And this is very, very nice. Translation. My dear Lord, by your causeless mercy, I am awakened to consciousness. Now, what verse does that remind us of? By your causeless mercy, I am awakened to consciousness. Now, you think of a verse at the end of the Gita? Nasta moha smita labda. What was Arjuna says? He says, "Mat prasada maya chuta." By your mercy, you know, that I'm actually understanding this. And this is the mood of the devotee. He's thinking, by your mercy, not, well, you know, because I'm so intelligent, because I'm so surrendered, I figured it all out on my own. This is the materialistic mentality. You know, by my own, it's actually a demonic mentality. This, what's that verse in there? I think it's the 14th chapter of the Gita. Ishwaraham aham bhogi siroham balavam sukhi. That I am powerful. Ishwaraham aham bhogi. I am the enjoyer. I'm the controller. I'm happy. You know, by my intelligence, I've achieved so much. By my power, I've conquered my enemies. That's a demonic mentality. They're thinking. You know, they don't actually understand the situation of the jiva in the body. They don't understand that the jiva is situated in the region of the heart, but it doesn't have the capacity to energize the body. It doesn't have the capacity to make the body do things. It just desires. And the Lord, by His will, by His sweet will, directs the body, controls the body, makes the body function. The Paramatma in the heart is actually what energizes the body and makes the body function. Because the jiva, 1/10,000th, the tip of a hair, is so tiny. So tiny and infinitesimal. Doesn't have the capacity on its own to do anything in this material world. It's only by the mercy of the Lord. And it's only due to our desire that Krishna enables us to do things in the material world. So this jiva here is understanding, I'm in a hopeless condition. And this, and you imagine, like, in the womb, and Vena Gopal was talking about it yesterday, that in the womb is being, you know, affected by the heat of digestion on one side, it's being affected. And actually, I remember now, Prabhupada says in an earlier purport, because of the way the baby was facing, because it describes, you know, the baby moves to the right, it's a male, the baby moves to the left, it's a female. Because the baby was facing a particular direction, this is a male child. I remember that, yeah. But it is in a very, very difficult position. And Prabhupada mentions in a previous purport that if the living entity, you know, if we were put in this situation, even for a few seconds, we would die. Very, very difficult situation. Yet, in this situation, this very difficult situation, the living entity has got this opportunity, very, very fortunate, has got this opportunity to remember Krishna and just to pray to Krishna. And we see as the verses go on, and saying, I don't want to come out of this situation because now I'm remembering you. And it's just like the prayers of King Kulashekhar. He's saying the same thing. It's like, you know, take me now while I'm able to chant your name. Take me now while I'm able to remember you, because I don't know what the future holds. You know, I was seeing, we just had a devotee leave his body, New Govardhan, and being the community priest, then I tend to, you know, deal with all the devotees when they're leaving their bodies. And, you know, he had quite an auspicious, not, well, I wouldn't say auspicious, but it was a good, he left his body in a very good way. It was during the middle of the day, the sun was in the northern hemisphere, just, you know, very good types of things were happening. But he wasn't in great pain, he wasn't lamenting, he wasn't in illusion. He was quite peaceful. He was there, his wife was there, you know, a devotee of Krishna, his family were there. But, you know, the bhajan, Prabhupada bhajans were going on. But he wasn't in a very difficult situation. He actually, you know, he was very peaceful about the whole process of dying. And he was telling his children that, you know, I'm okay with this. I don't mind. I'm happy to go. You know, so he was in a very peaceful situation. And he set quite a good example of how to die. But that's not always the case. You know, because we see sometimes people die in very, very horrific situations. I remember years ago I saw, I was just sitting at the, you know, at the road in Brisbane waiting to turn right. And there was a car in front of me, turned right, and the motorbike was coming down the road and just slammed straight into the side of the motorbike, and the guy died within a few minutes of that. So, very, very brutal way of leaving the body. You know, so, you know, this living entity's understanding is like, you know, okay, right now I can think of you, but I don't know what's going to happen when I come out of here. I've got no idea what's going to happen. So, you know, let me stay here and think of you. We'll see in a few verses he prays. Did I read the translation? Huh? No. My dear Lord, by your causeless mercy, I am awakened to consciousness, although I am only 10 months old. For this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the friend of all fallen souls, there is no way to express my gratitude but to pray with folded hands. Responsibility, please. My dear Lord,
by your causeless mercy,
I am awakened to consciousness.
Although I am only 10 months old.
For this causeless mercy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
the friend of all fallen souls.
What's the word in the verse that means the friend of all fallen souls? Dinanath. Yeah, Dinanath is the friend or the Lord. Dina means fallen, and Natha means Lord. So he's the Lord or the friend of all fallen souls. There is no way to express my gratitude.
But to pray with folded hands.
This is Anjali. It's just like when we offer flowers and we do Pushpanjali. You're supposed to offer with Pushpanjali with folded hands. And usually we just like throw them like this, but actually the proper way is to like that. I guess that's our sporting sort of background. We want to throw things, but actually it's meant to be humility offered with folded hands. Srila Prabhupada's purport. As stated in Bhagavad Gita, intelligence and forgetfulness are both supplied by the super soul sitting within the individual soul, sitting with the individual soul within the body. Who knows that verse? It's the verse that Prabhupada quotes the most in all of his classes and books. What's the verse? Sarvasya chaham hridi sarvishto mata smitik jnanam aponam cha. He quotes that verse more than any other verse in different ways. When he sees that a conditioned soul is very serious about getting out of the clutches of the material influence, the Supreme Lord gives intelligence internally as a super soul and externally as a spiritual master or as an incarnation of the personality of Godhead himself. He helps by speaking instructions such as Bhagavad Gita. See, if the jiva is interested in Krishna, Krishna provides remembrance, he provides intelligence. But if the jiva is interested in forgetting, he provides that forgetfulness. And he also provides the intelligence how to forget Krishna. Just like look around this world. All these things they're making and doing and planes and this and that. Where do you think the intelligence that makes these things come from? It comes from Krishna. So Krishna's providing that intelligence whereby they can build these things so they get so engrossed in sense gratification, they forget him. It's not what Krishna wants, it's what the jiva wants, but he's just, as the Paramatma, he's impartially fulfilling the desire of the jiva. Because the jiva doesn't want to remember him. But if the jiva wants to remember Krishna, then Krishna makes all facility there. Prabhupada's father would say sometimes, that Krishna has 10 hands. If he wants to take from you, how much can you hold with your 2? But if he wants to give you with his 10 hands, how much can you take? So if Krishna, if we want to surrender to Krishna, if we want to remember Krishna, then Krishna gives us so much facility to remember him. But if we want to forget him, then he gives us so much facility to forget him. And actually we get cast down. Krishna mentions in the Gita that for those envious persons, the demons, he casts them down into material nature. And they get so deeply buried under the modes of the material nature, there is no possibility for them to remember Krishna. What's that? Mitobi Bhajata Griha. What's that? Mati na Krishna Parato Satova Mitobi Bhajata Griha Vratanam Adanta Gobi Vishatam Tamishram Puna Punas Chavita Chavananam. That the persons who are considering that sense gratification is the aim of life is not by their own endeavor or by the endeavor of others or by a combination of both will they actually remember their constitutional position. They'll never actually remember. And it was Na te vidu swata katim hi vishnum, Prahlad Maharaj says. They don't understand, they'll never understand that the goal of life, the destination, the katim, the destination, the supreme destination, is Vishnu. Because why? Because they think that sense gratification is the aim of life. And we see this whole creation we're living in, even though it's becoming more and more sophisticated all the time, they're still thinking. There was an interesting discussion yesterday about protecting women, protecting children, and it's kind of good to see that in the material world, in the broader society, that people are becoming more and more concerned about this, to see that children are being protected and that women are being protected, and their rights are looked after, things like that. And in one sense, you can see they're making some advancement because they're actually starting to understand that the living entities are equal. It doesn't matter what body they've got. But unfortunately, they're only dealing on the level of human beings. They're not actually realizing that all living entities, plants, animals, fish, whatever, birds, all equal. They all have, you know, even an insect, you know. And I've seen so many times, like, you know, a bug will be like walking across the table and someone will go, squat them. They're in my way. But you've just, you know, killed that living entity, that person. You've just killed them without any regard for their life. And there's a, Prabhupada talks about, that there's a verse he quotes from Chanaka Pandit. And I can't remember the verse right now. Maybe some of you know it. But then he talks about how, it's about, you know, understanding another person's pain. Because the thing, like Prabhupada, he paraphrases in one place, he mentions how, you know, if I cut your throat, you're going to feel the same pain as if you cut my throat. You know, so, but the thing is, the living, you know, the human beings, you know, jivas in human bodies, they think because, you know, these living entities are less intelligent or maybe not so conscious of this and that, then they're not feeling pain. But the fact is, they do feel pain. You know, all living entities, and you can see that. I remember living in the country, in New South Wales, years ago, behind Coffs Harbour, and there was, you know, it was, we lived, the house we had was very next to a, right next to this farmer who lived right up the road, and every year they use very clinical terms. They would cull the vealers, is what they would say. Basically, what they do is they'd steal all the mother cow, the cow's children, and sell them to the market, you know, and they get killed. But they use very clinical terms, so it sounds nice, you know. So they would take all the calves away, but what they would do is they'd put all the cows way down away from their house so they didn't have to hear them crying all night long. Because for weeks afterwards, they'd be crying because their children had been taken away. And still, they had this experience of the cows crying from the loss of their children, yet they think they have no feelings. Pashanapi na pashati. Even though seeing, they don't see. Right in front of their faces, they see that these living entities are suffering. These living entities are crying out for the loss of their children. But oh, they're just senseless animals. They have no understanding. They have no feelings. And, you know, people treat children like that sometimes. They have no feelings. They're just senseless living entities, you know. So, you know, it's because they're so engrossed in sense gratification, they cannot see the reality that's right before them. That's why Prahlad Maharaj says, Pashanapi na pashati. Even though seeing, they do not see. The reality is right in front of them, but they don't see it. Because why? Maya prahita jnana. Their knowledge is stolen by illusion. They don't want to see the reality in this world. Therefore, Maya covers them over, so they can't see the reality that's right there in front of their face. Even if they try to, they can't see the reality, because they're so caught up in sense gratification. And that's what's going to happen to this jiva. This jiva is in the womb praying to Krishna. But then as soon as the jiva comes out, becomes covered by material nature and cannot remember the prayers, cannot remember his position as a servant of Krishna. Therefore, it begs the question, if the jiva was so Krishna conscious, you know, in this horrible condition, which we couldn't survive for, even for a few seconds, how come it is that when the jiva comes out, it forgets Krishna? What's your answer? Huh? What's the answer to that? Huh?
Loss of consciousness.
Loss of consciousness, yeah.
Pain. Memory loss.
Pain. But what does it mean? What does it say about that jiva? There's a nice verse in the sixth canto spoken by Lord Shiva to Parvati. It says, Narayanaya para sarve nakutashana bibhyati swarga apavaga narekeshu apitulya dashana. For the devotee of the Lord never fears any condition of life. The heavenly planets, the hellish planets, it's all the liberation, it's all the same. Why? Because they never stop thinking about Krishna. That's, you know, Shiva was addressing, talking about Chitraketu. So Chitraketu was a very, very advanced devotee of Krishna.
It said the time of birth, the anoxia. He was trying to breathe.
Yeah. But that's okay. That's okay. But what I'm asking is, why does this particular jiva forget? Whereas Lord Shiva says that a devotee of Krishna never forgets. What does it say about this jiva? He's still conditioned, because when he comes out of the womb, he allows himself to, but he becomes overwhelmed by the influence of material nature. Think of another jiva, very famous jiva, right? Was in a similar condition and came out, and what happened? Left straight away because he didn't want to become influenced by this. He stayed in the womb for 16 years because he didn't want to be influenced by the material nature. So this is hellish, I don't want to. And then the father said, please come out. So he came out. And then he got up and left, because I don't want to stay around, this is all Maya. Yeah? So we can see, Krishna consciousness is science, and by understanding the science, we can see, there's an interesting book called Madhurya Kadambini, and in this Madhurya Kadambini, it actually explains where we are. I think the translation is the cloud bank of nectar or something like that. But it helps us to understand very systematically and scientifically where we are in Krishna consciousness. So this then assists us in saying, okay, I'm at this point in my Krishna consciousness, that's where I want to go to. I've got to go through all these different steps to get there, and this is what I have to do to progress through these different steps. So there's obviously this jiva is very, very in a very difficult condition. Very difficult. But coming out of this, but we see it's kind of almost like an impersonal void, like the Brahmajyoti bit, because there's not much going on in there. It's getting attacked by the fire of digestion from the mother's belly. It's getting eaten by worms and all sorts of noxious things. I don't know if anyone here has seen childbirth, but I have, and it's not a very, it's presented as being very romantic and all this kind of flowery kind of terms, but it's actually quite a unpleasant experience for the mother and for the child, and like all the fluids that come out and stuff. It's quite, at least my experience was it. You've had plenty of experience like that, haven't you?
The world by school, urine, everything.
Yeah. It's not a pleasant experience, Yeah. But the thing is, the child doesn't have a lot of sensory stimulation going on. There's not a lot of distraction. But when we come out into this material world, straight away, I remember years ago when my daughter was born, straight away, because I knew what was going to happen, is the nurse was going to do the thing and say, oh, it's a girl. So straight away I started chanting Hare Krishna loudly, so that it was the first thing the child heard was, not the bodily identification, but the holy name of Krishna. But probably due to my lack of purity, it didn't work so well. But then the mother takes the child, the mother starts to feed the child and is caressing the child. And all this sensory stimulation starts to happen. Yeah. So then this starts to reinforce this concept of being the body, because the child, in the womb, this fortunate living entity is understanding their connection with Krishna. But when they come out, all these, persons are reinforcing the bodily concept of life. And that's why, this material world is compared to be a very, very, is considered to be a very, very difficult situation, because constantly we're being assaulted. And it is an assault. It's just like, if you ever go into a war environment, the enemies are assaulting each other with all these like weapons and stuff, and the attacks are constant sometimes, and they're constantly attacking them to try and wear down their defenses. Yeah? But here in the material world, it's exactly the same thing. It is we are constantly being assaulted by the modes of nature, by the various enticements of the material nature. And there's no let up. Even when you're sleeping, your mind is bringing up all these remembrances of different things you've had, the experience of. So it never stops. Even when you die, it never stops. It just keeps going. There's no rest from it in this material world. So in that sense, that's why it's saying that this jiva is fortunate. Not only is it because he's remembering Krishna, but because he's remembering Krishna in a situation where he doesn't have so much sensory stimulation. But then, as I was saying, you know, the verse from the Bhagavatam, the ninth, sixth canto, it's saying that one, for one who's actually a devotee of Krishna, then that doesn't bother them, because there's a verse where it explains that the senses of one who's advanced in Krishna consciousness are just like a serpent whose fangs have been broken. Now, you know, you don't probably get so many experiences of serpents here, but we get quite a bit of experience of serpents up home. I actually caught a few just recently. It's, you know, for me, it's a very scary experience. You know, because some of the devotees were leaving the back door open on the deity part, and the snakes would come inside, and they'd all run for the. For me, the head would say, "Oh, you've got to save us! You've got to save us! Catch the snake!" I thought, "I don't want to touch the thing," you know. So you know, you get a lot of experience, and snakes. What they do is like they'll just be lying there, and they're pretty timid generally, but if you disturb them, they'll either run away. Or if they see there's no escape, what they do is they recoil their you see their neck, it sort of bends like that, and they recoil, and they're ready to strike. And so they'll strike. And it depends what sort of snake it is. Australia's been called the lucky country. I once had one fellow from the, from what they call it, the there's up near Toowoomba somewhere, Darling Downs Zoo or something it is. And he was telling me the reason why Australia's been called the lucky country, because out of the 25 most venomous snakes in the world, Australia's got 22. Yeah? That's why we're lucky. And we've got number one and number five. No, number two and number five at New Govardhan. We've got the brown snake and the death adder. No, we don't have taipans. They're up north. Yeah, not there. I've never seen one. I've seen brown snakes. I've seen death adders. I've seen black snakes. So the thing is, the senses are like a serpent, yeah? And the senses they'll bite at any time. So a serpent, the same thing, if you agitate the serpent, it'll bite you. You step on it. You know, I almost stepped on a death adder one day. That was really scary. But they'll bite you straight away. There's no thought about, oh, that was a mistake or anything like that. They just bite straight away. That's the reaction. So the senses are like that. You agitate the senses, they'll bite. But for one who's advanced in the process of devotional service, it's like the fangs of the serpent's broken. So even though it'll bite, the senses will bite, but nothing happens. There's no poison. So the practice of bhakti, the practice of devotional service, enables us to overcome the influence of the material senses. Because the material senses, conditioned by the modes of material nature, influence us in certain ways. They influence us to try to enjoy more and more of this material world. They influence us, and we become covered over by this material conditioning. We start with, we're thinking we're the body, we're thinking that I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. And that's the situation of all living entities in this material world, unless they take to the process of Krishna consciousness. Yeah. So we see here this jiva is in a very fortunate situation, but when he comes out of the womb, then he forgets. And that's what's happened to all of us. And even the same, you know, like in Krishna consciousness, we see, you know, like I've had the experience so many times of sitting in the class. You know, I remember not so long ago, Mahatma Prabhu was here in Australia. He gave this really nice class. He made a point. And I was thinking, yeah, that's actually how it is. Oh, I've got to focus on that and try to, you know, apply that in my life. And so for a few days afterwards, I was, you know, really focused on it and this thing and that thing. And I'm not going to do this anymore, you know. And I was able to focus and stop doing, you know, this thing I was concerned about. And then after a while, you know, the material nature sort of gradually erodes your determination. You just go back to what you were doing. And that's what happens to everyone, unless they're really determined in Krishna consciousness, is the material nature. Just very subtly wears away our determination, unless we're very, very focused. So that's, you know, that's what happens if we don't... really apply ourselves in Krishna consciousness. I'll finish the purport. The Lord is always seeking the opportunity to reclaim the fallen souls to his abode, the kingdom of God. We should always feel very much obliged to the personality of Godhead, for he's always anxious to bring us into the happy condition of eternal life. There is no sufficient means to repay the personality of Godhead for his act of benediction. Therefore, we can simply feel gratitude and pray to the Lord with folded hands. This prayer of the child in the womb may be questioned by some atheistic people. How can a child pray in such a nice way in the womb of his mother? What's the answer to that? How can the child pray in such a nice way? Yeah, it's by Krishna's mercy alone that the child can pray. And the child recognizes that. I'm awakened to consciousness by your causeless mercy. Prasada maya chuta, by your mercy alone that I'm in this situation. And this is a very, very helpful consciousness, or a very, very helpful state of mind for us to adopt, is that whatever's going on, whatever things are going on in my life that are positive, it's all by Krishna's mercy. The fact that I can come to the temple, the fact that I can have darshan of Srila Prabhupada and hear his instructions and read the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is such an extraordinary benediction. It's not an ordinary scripture, and the fact that we can have this opportunity to read the Bhagavatam every day and to try to deeply enter into the understanding of Bhagavatam, very, very rare. This is Manushyanam Sahasya Shuv. It explains in the Gita that out of many thousands among men, one may try to improve themselves. And out of many thousands of persons who try to improve themselves, a few will achieve success. And out of many thousands of those who achieve success, hardly one will understand Krishna in truth. But the Bhagavatam gives us that opportunity to understand Krishna in truth, because the Bhagavatam only speaks about Krishna. And the whole Bhagavatam is just addressing this point of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So therefore, this mood of being very, very appreciative of Krishna's mercy in our lives is very productive, very helpful in our spiritual progress, because we're understanding it's not by my endeavors. Because by my endeavors, what can I do? Nothing. Because I'm just a tiny, infinitesimal spirit soul in the region of the heart. Hari Bol Prabhu Prabhu. We're just a tiny, tiny little jiva in the region of the heart, and we have very limited capacity to do anything. But by Krishna's grace, we can achieve so many things. If we actually surrender to Krishna and we take his guidance, accept the mercy that he's extending to us, then so many things can be achieved. But by our own, we can do nothing. And that's why this jiva is very, very grateful and is offering these prayers. Is by your mercy, my Lord, I understand that I'm able to pray to you. I understand my position. Everything is possible by the grace of the Lord. The child is put into such a precarious condition externally, but internally he is the same, and the Lord is there. By the transcendental energy of the Lord, everything is possible. So this is a very important point also. It's like, externally, we're put into so many different situations. Sometimes we're in a happy situation, sometimes we're in a difficult situation. Sometimes we're in a human body, a demigod body, an animal body, a plant body, a worm body. So many different situations we get put into. But that's just external. And it's always going to change. That's the only thing that's constant in this material world, is change. There's no steady state in this material world. It's constantly changing. And we may be in a nice situation right now, but tomorrow that might change. I remember I was talking about this when I was, I think it was in New Govardhan just recently, I was giving class. New Govardhan, very, very sattvic environment. Nice, it's out in the countryside, and there's cows there, and it's very peaceful and quiet. That might sort of lull people into thinking, very perfect situation, mode of goodness, this thing, that thing. But you can never predict what's going to happen. And I gave an example. I was in Seattle in the USA when this 9/11 happened, and they brought the World Trade Towers down. And then I remember flying back a few days later to London, and then we heard on the news that a plane had taken off from one of the airports, either LaGuardia or JFK, I don't remember, and one of the engines dropped off and fell through the roof of a house and killed two people. So I was saying to the devotees there that where we are in New Govardhan is underneath the glide path from the Gold Coast Airport. So the planes are flying overhead all the time. So who knows? Because it happened just recently in Sydney, You know, a plane was flying into Sydney from somewhere in the country, and one of the propellers fell off. And it's lucky it didn't hit anyone, but if it was flying over Sydney, you can imagine, you know, this propeller comes down through the roof. Yeah. And so, you know, so things like this do happen. It's not like they don't happen. It's not like it's just, you know, something they put in horror movies or something. It happens. So you can imagine, like I was saying to the devotees, they're sitting in this temple in New Govanan, and all of a sudden, an engine from a plane comes through the roof. How many of us would be left? We'd all be killed. So you just never know in this material world what's going to happen. So therefore, you know, and as Prabhupada's saying here, internally it remains the same. The Lord is always there. So rather than being so caught up in the external, which is what happens to us in the material world, because of this constant sort of information is just constantly flowing, and all this sensory stuff is flowing in, rather than connecting with that and identifying with that, we have to realize that this is external. We have to realize that this is just the workings of the material nature. And what's that verse in the Gita where bewildered by the influence of false ego, the living entity thinks himself the doer of activities, where in actuality carried out by the three modes of material nature. Prakriti kriyamana nigunai kamani sarvasha ahankara vimudatma. Ahankara vimudatma. The foolish living entity. Kataham iti manyate. Iti manyate. I am the doer. He's thinking that I'm the one who does all this. But actually, no. It's all going on by the modes of material nature. Material nature is all this external stuff. It's just the material energy. We need to understand that. We need to put that into practice in our lives. And understand that actually, you know, the real thing, the jiva in the region of the heart and the relationship with Krishna, these are the things we need to focus on. These are the things we need to dwell on and become more and more internal in our practice and less external. It doesn't mean we become vegetables and stop doing things. No, we continue in our activities because the process of devotional service is active. But we understand that the externals are not so important. Because they're external, and generally speaking, they're temporary. But understanding that, no, what's really happening is the relationship with Jiva and with Krishna. So Prabhupada makes that point here, that he's saying here that, but internally he is the same. The Jiva never changes. It doesn't matter what body you're in. You know, as in the, what's that verse? That from the meanest insect, Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur translated as the meanest insect, meaning like the Indra Gopa, it's a single celled living entity, up to Indra, you know, the king of heaven, all walk in the path of work. They're all caught up by karma. But only when one takes shelter of the lotus feet. And even like, because I was talking, I think in one of the verses yesterday, there's the Munis, how they try to approach Krishna, yet they can't. There's Muni Pungabhanam, so Pyasti Yapra, is in the Abhijinti Tattva. They can endeavor, you know, even at the speed of mind, they can try to approach Krishna's lotus feet, but they can't approach Krishna's lotus feet because why? They don't have bhakti. Only through the process of bhakti can one approach Krishna. And so bhakti is not so much an external, because the activities of a devotee and the activities of non-devotees aren't that much different in many ways. Of course, we're vegetarian and things like that. But, you know, people are eating, people are sleeping. They're doing all these different things, the same as we're doing. But what's the difference is the reason they do it. They're doing it for sense enjoyment. We're doing it for Krishna. That means bhakti. May not be very, very advanced bhakti, but it's still bhakti. And this is the internal relationship between the jiva and the Lord. And therefore, Prabhupada concludes this, is by the transcendental energy of the Lord, everything is possible. So we understand, you know, that I'm not this body. That's external. The body's external. We understand I'm Krishna's eternal servant. That's internal. And by Krishna's mercy, I can go back to Godhead in this life. But if we don't accept Krishna's mercy, if we don't aspire for Krishna's mercy, then we'll have to stay here for countless lifetimes, going through this very, very vicious cycle of birth, death, old age and disease. It's not, you know, like, it's not a pleasant experience. If you're thinking there's a pleasant experience here in this material world, you're bewildered. You're completely deluded. You know, just watch someone dying and tell me you think that's pleasant. Just watch someone, you know, going to the dentist and having their tooth pulled out and telling me that's pleasant. There's so much going on in this material world. It's not a pleasant place. Mahabhuhi would say, it's not a fit place for a gentleman. And he likened the material world to a ditch into which people pass stool. Now, we don't have that experience here, but you go to India and you go down to the Jamuna, during the dry season when the Jamuna is quite low. They dig all these trenches along the Jamuna and people pass stool. Thank you. People pass stool into the trenches and they're very, very smelly and, don't have to describe it too much, but I think you get the idea. So Mahabhu likened the material world to that. Now, what fool is going to try to seek enjoyment in such a place? Maybe hogs and dogs and people like that, but an intelligent living entity understands what this material world is. And doesn't try to endeavor in this material world for happiness, because they understand the happiness in this material world is very small in comparison to the happiness in the spiritual realm. Because in the spiritual realm there is no birth, there is no death, there is no old age, there is no diseases. One just is engaged in relationship with the Supreme Lord. So this is the point that's being discussed here by the Jiva. And there's a really there's a couple of nice verses I thought to read to you just in concluding from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Just see if I can find them quickly for you. Where did I see it? Excuse me. And this is Lord Chaitanya talking with Sanatana Goswami, I believe. Apart from the ever liberated devotees, there are the conditioned souls who always turn away from the service of the Lord. They are perpetually conditioned in this material world and are subject to the material tribulations brought about by different bodily forms in hellish conditions. Then the next verse. Due to his being opposed to Krishna consciousness, the conditioned soul is punished by the witch of the external energy Maya. So you see, this is what's happening for the jiva. They're opposed to Krishna consciousness, therefore they suffer. He is thus ready to suffer the threefold miseries, miseries brought about by the body and the mind and inimical behavior of other living entities, adiatmic, adibhautic, adidaivic, and natural disturbances caused by the demigods. That's the situation for all living entities in this world. In this way, the conditioned soul becomes the servant of lusty desires. And when these are not fulfilled, he becomes the servant of anger and continues to be kicked by the external energy, Maya. Wandering and wandering throughout the universe, he may by chance get the association of a devotee physician whose instructions and hymns make the witch of the external energy flee. The conditioned soul thus gets into touch with devotional service to Lord Krishna, and in this way he can approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. So it's only by the mercy of Krishna that we actually come to understand, by the mercy of the devotees actually, we come to understand. What's that? Guru Krishna Pai Kripa Bhakti Lata Beach. It's explained that but by the mercy of Krishna, one gets a guru. Then by the mercy of guru, one understands Krishna. So by the mercy of the devotee, Krishna makes the arrangement so we have this connection. But we need to follow the instructions. So when we come to contact with someone who's a qualified to give Krishna consciousness. And guru doesn't just mean diksha. It means siksha, it means so many different things. So the point is the one is giving us guidance back to the spiritual realm. That's guru. Whether we take diksha from them or not is irrelevant. And actually Jiva Goswami in the Bhakti Sandarbha mentions that he says actually diksha is not necessary. But then this point here is that the devotee physician actually enables the living entity to become free from the material nature and thus approach nearer and nearer to the Lord. And I think it's the next verse, which is a really, really nice verse, which Prabhupada quotes a fair bit. And many of you may know this verse, Kamadinam Katina Katida Palita Dunideshas Te Shamjata Mai Na Kura Na Trapa No Pashanti Uts Sri Jaitan Ata Yadupate Sampratam Labdha Buddhis Tam Ayata Sharanam Abhayam Mam Niyunksh Vatma Dashe. Prabhupada quotes it quite a bit. O my Lord, there is no limit to the unwanted orders of lusty desires. Yeah? Have we had that experience before? You all had that experience? I know I have. No limit. They just keep coming and coming and coming and coming. As long as we entertain them, they'll just keep coming. Although I have rendered these desires so much service, they have not shown any mercy to me. I have not been ashamed to serve them, nor have I even desired to give them up. Oh my Lord, O head of the Yadu dynasty, recently, however, my intelligence has been awakened, and now I am giving them up. Due to transcendental intelligence, I now refuse to obey the unwanted orders of these lusty desires, and now I come to you to surrender myself at your fearless lotus feet. Kindly engage me in your personal service and save me. So that's our condition in this material world, is we're just being afflicted by these material desires constantly. And we need to make this choice to give it up. That's all it is. That's what Krishna consciousness is about, is giving up this choice, just letting go of the material nature. I don't want this anymore. I want Krishna. Just making a conscious choice. Not just that we go through it blindly, just hope it happens to us, because it won't. We need to choose. Do you want Krishna or you want material nature? And then we make this choice, we make a conscious choice. And there's a really nice series of verses in the end of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, which are verses that are quoted from Lord Ramachandra, where Lord Rami is saying, if a devotee even once seriously and sincerely says to me, my dear Lord, from this day on I am yours, he says, I will never leave that person. So all we have to do is just make this conscious choice that I'm not going to entertain these material desires anymore. I'm just going to be Krishna's devotee. I'm going to surrender to Krishna more and more. Please engage me in your service. And then Krishna's there. He'll always be there for us. Even though we may get ourselves into difficulty, he'll always be there for us. And we see that, you know, like so often we've seen devotees that go away for some time. You know, they do years and years and years of devotional service, like very, you know, significant devotional service, and they go away for some time. And when it comes to the point of leaving their body, what happens? Krishna brings them back. So many times I've seen that happen. Because Krishna, he said, you know, Lord Rama, he said, I'll never leave them. And Krishna says in the Gita, he says, declare it boldly, my devotee will never perish. And so Krishna, he won't let us rot in this material world. If we take that choice of surrendering to him, then you know, our destination is assured. It may take more than one lifetime. That's okay, but our destination is assured. We will go back to Godhead at some point. Okay, I'll thank you very much. I'll finish it there. Srila Prabhupada ki. Yeah. Any questions at all? He's asking if animals in the womb, because they're also feeling the same pain and things like that, can they offer prayers like this? Generally speaking, when one's in an animal body, it's due to their sinful activities, sinful desires. And generally in such, because Krishna says, you know, I perpetually cast them down to lower species because of their sinful activities. Generally speaking, a living entity in an animal body doesn't have that opportunity. But it's not to say that it can't happen, because it has. When we look at the story of Judd Bharat, you know, he was born as a deer. But even in the deer body, he remembered his past life. Therefore, he didn't associate with other deers. He hung around the ashram of the rishis because he understood what had happened. So, but it's not common. I mean, I have not read any examples of this happening. But we understand by Krishna's mercy. You know, what's that? Mukham karati vachalong pangalong dangleti girim yat kripa tamaham bande shri guru nidhanam shri chaitanyasham paramanan madhavam. That by the mercy of Lord, a blind man can see the skies at night, a lame man can climb a tall mountain, you know, and a dumb man can speak the most eloquent poetry. by the mercy of Krishna. So everything is possible by the mercy of Krishna, but it doesn't usually happen. And I haven't read in the scriptures anything like that happening. But yeah, by Krishna's mercy, everything is possible. Mahatmaji.
Merci, thank you very much. You said a very important point. There is somebody touched the Lord. You don't feel, Krishna feels. I happened to see on the internet how they kill the cows. Such horrible brutality, murder.
Yeah.
We had a neighbor when we lived in New South Wales. The lady used to wear, she was in the chicken factory. And when the chicken is approaching there, they are afraid. They come, but they can't move.
Yeah, yeah.
So brutal here.
And because people are doing those types of things, then they will suffer grievously in their next lives. And this is where, you know, this is where we need to extend compassion, is because they don't know what they're doing. Doesn't mean they're free from karma. They're just ignorant to the reality of what it is they're doing by killing these animals and the suffering they're bringing upon themselves. So as devotees, we don't turn around, oh, they deserve it. That's not a devotee's mood at all. A devotee is paradukha dukhi. When people are suffering, he feels very sad about that. So we need to help them to understand. Yeah, because we understand, we know the truth, they don't. Therefore, our business is to help them, to give illumination, to help them to see the foolishness in their lives. And it may take lifetimes for them to get it, but we still have to try. We still have to try to give them Krishna consciousness in one way or another. You know, through prasad distribution, through book distribution, through deity worship, through Harinam Sankirtan. Somehow or other give them Krishna consciousness so that they can become free. Because it's, you know, if you look at the Vedic culture, the Vedic concept of how to live life, this world we're living in is so far away from that. It's just so far away from it. It's just unbelievable. Even like, you know, the way people dress, the way people talk to each other, you know, the way they behave, the way they do everything. The whole life is geared to sense gratification. Vedic culture has one purpose, is to direct the jiva to Krishna, to, you know, provide a favorable environment so the jiva wants to surrender to Krishna more and more. But we see that's not what's happening in this world. People are just like, you know, Prabhupada would say breakneck speed pursuing sense gratification. And he used breakneck speed for a good reason, because they break their necks trying to achieve their sense. You know, you look at these stupid people, you know, like doing these extreme sports where they'll jump out of a plane without a parachute. And that's just stupid. You've got to expect, okay, sometimes, you know, because they have these hang gliders, not hang gliders, but they fly like a flying fox, you know, so you know where they're going in their next life, right? You know, and they jump out of planes, they jump out. I mean, it's pretty amazing what they do, but you know, like, you've got to figure that at some point something's going to go wrong. And they kill themselves. Yeah. And they shoot themselves out of cannons, they do all sorts of, you know, mad things. At some,
huh?
Yeah, it's just their karma runs out, is what happens. Their good karma runs out, you know. But yes, but the whole society is just hell bent on enjoyment, and it's just becoming more and more and more degraded. Every day it's become more and more degraded, and people are just their resistance to sinful activities is just going down and down and down all the time. And they don't even know what pious life is about. They've got no idea. You know, they've got all these different notions about pious life. They think it's like, you know, doing some sort of welfare work or feeding the poor or something like this, but you know, they don't really know that you know, it means surrendering to Krishna. It means becoming a servant of Krishna.
Or avidya.
Huh? Avidya. Yeah, avidya. They're completely in this concept that I am this body. So the process of Krishna consciousness is so important because it helps the jiva to understand who they really are. So
there. Annamaya, we are almost on Annamaya.
Yeah.
Then Pranamaya, then Jnanamaya.
Yeah. But therefore, what I'm saying is that we need to be as active as we can, according to our individual capacity, in giving Krishna consciousness to others. so that they can get out of this very, very difficult situation. Because, you know, one of the primary qualities of a devotee is compassion. They see the suffering of others because they understand, you know, we understand what life is meant to be. We see what's going on in this material world. Therefore, rather than condemning them and cursing or whatever, you know, or saying bad things, we become compassionate. Understand that Krishna consciousness is the only hope for these people. So we have to be eager to give them Krishna consciousness. Yes, Vajji. Yeah, Vedically, in the Vedic system, a month is 4 weeks long. Yeah, whereas in the Gregorian, you know, the Western sort of system, it's like the months are all different lengths and stuff like that. But if you look, generally speaking, we follow the lunar calendar, and the lunar calendar is 4 weeks. You've got, you know, Pratipat, Dvitiya, Tritiya, Chaturthiya. You know, it just goes for 14 days in a fortnight, and you have two fortnights in a month, and it goes. So it's just based on the moon phase, which is 28 days. So then if you add it up, the baby is, you know, pregnancy is about 40 weeks. Yeah. But by you know, Western calendar, that's not nine and a bit months. There's just different ways of counting the same amount of time. Yeah? Okay, thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki, Sanadeva Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nityai Gaur Premanandi.